Nexus Church is all about cultivating an authentic Christian community where old and young alike journey with Jesus and are transformed by the gospel. May we be challenged and inspired by the power of His Word.
I am really, really honored to have the chance to talk to you guys tonight. I really am. Sunday PMs are just the best services. They really are. It is a vibe. I learned that word from Pastor Beck, and they are a vibe. And to Nathan's point, I want to say, you know, I really tried growing up. I tried really, really hard. I really wanted to be cool. And I tried to be cool. And I tried to, if I'd had the internet when I was a kid, I would have looked up how do you be cool. But in my, somehow, some way, in my journey of trying to be cool, somehow it ended up with me becoming a Bible nerd and learning ancient Hebrew. So, task failed. But here we go. And here I am. And so we're just going to go for it. So I apologize in advance for the nerdiness that's about to take place. But here we go. You know, we're currently in this I Am series. And in this series, we're exploring all of these I Am statements that Jesus makes about himself in John's gospel. And all of these statements, in a really Jewish way, John ties Jesus' identity with the divine identity, the divine identity, by using this term, I Am. Now, using this term, I am, was a very big deal for the Jewish people because, as Andy so brilliantly unpacked at the beginning of this series, I am is the name that Yahweh, the God of Israel, gave to Moses at the burning bush when Moses asked him the question, who is this God that is sending me into this potentially lethal situation with Pharaoh? Who is this God? And we too, in our cultural moment and in our time in history, we're faced with a similar situation where we have to answer the statement, God is blank. God is blank. And then we have to fill in that blank with something. Now, for some, may feel like an easy statement to answer, and you'd say, well, God is Father, God is loving, God is kind. Or maybe you'd say, you know, God is distant. God is just that gray-bearded guy up there. He's the man upstairs. Or maybe you'd even say, God is not real, and that you don't believe in this God. But the reality is, you have to come to terms with that answer to that statement and come to terms with the fact that your life, the way that you answer that statement, is going to shape everything about your life. The great philosopher and theologian Dallas Willard said it this way. He said, all the issues and the failures of life arise from a failure to think rightly about God. All the issues and failures of life arise from a failure to think rightly about God. Now, notice there, he didn't say a failure to think about God. He said a failure to think rightly about God. Our culture thinks lots about God. And in fact, you can look around and you can see that not only does it think a lot about God, it creates a lot of YouTube channels about what it thinks about God and a lot of podcasts about what it thinks about God. But it can get a little confusing when we use this term, God. And it can get a little bit muddy when we use this term, God, because this term, God, is just a title. Just like doctor or Bible nerd. And so we have to say, well, when we talk about God, what are we talking about? Because I often say, if somebody tells me I don't believe in God, and I'll often say, well, why don't you tell me something about this God that you don't believe in? Because the chances are, maybe I don't believe in that God either. So if you're going to say, oh, the guy upstairs, bearded old man who just loves punishing and loves telling everybody what to do, I go, yeah, I don't believe in that God either. So we need to clarify our terms when we talk about God. But when we read this, this beautiful and complex library of narratives and poems and songs, the character of this God begins to take shape. And the name of this God, Yahweh, I Am, begins to reveal something about who He is and what He's like. And as Pastor Andy explored a few weeks ago, that name Yahweh meant, in its translation, I will be what I will be. And the narrative goes on to show what this God will be. And what does He say and show that He will be? To Pastor Josh's sermon this morning, with us. This God shows through His character and His action that He is with us. Now, and He's going to be with you. Through the trials and the struggles and the complexities and the wrestling of life, this is a God who says yes to all of it. And yes, I'm in it with you and I'm with you. And that's what this God's like. Regardless of the podcast and the YouTube channels and all those things, that's what this God's like. And so you have to ask the question, is that my picture of God? Because that's the picture of this God. A few years ago, when we moved to Australia, a couple years after we'd been here, we decided we were going to take a big family trip to New Zealand. And we were there for 17 days, and it was amazing. We did the North Island, the South Island, but it just happened to be that while we were on this trip, it happened to be mine and Suze's anniversary. And so Suze, who is, man, my wife, is, and she used to be even more so than now, an adventure junkie. And let me tell you can go to New Zealand and be an adventure junkie because New Zealanders are crazy. They don't even care. It's wild. So she happened to find, within driving distance, on our anniversary, one of the world's tallest abseils. 100 meters from the surface of the earth into some deep crevice below. And they named it the Lost World. That's what they named it. Very, very easy to, understand why. But you could get lost down there. You could fall off and die. But if you know anything about us, she loves it. But if you know anything about me, it is the one thing in my life that I would never ask for as a gift because I'm terrified of those kind. I'm not scared of heights so much, but it's just any kind of adventure. I just, I'm a nerd. What do I say? I'm a nerd. And that's okay. But we got there. Well, of course I did it. And I said, yeah, let's go, let's do this thing. And so I get there, and we go through all the stuff you have to do to get there. And all of a sudden, we come to the ledge. And they put this safety bar there. And you go, okay, well, that's good. That's a safety bar. That should be there. But then they tell you, oh, well, yeah, but you're going to have to climb over the safety bar. And so there I am. You're literally climbing up and over the thing that's supposed to keep you from falling to your death. And so there I am, and we're harnessed up, and we're clipped in, and you're holding onto that bar. And, Suze was probably doing backflips or whatever she was doing. But I was holding on to that bar for dear life. And there came a moment when I looked down, and we have a photo here of, that's what I looked at. Yeah, that's right. That's death. And so I'm hanging there 100 meters over my potential grave, and there comes a moment when I had to make a choice. I'm either going to trust this harness and system that they put me in, this contraption, and these people who have harnessed me up that are probably, the most brilliant people in the world, working for minimum wage, I'm sure. And I'm trusting that this thing is going to hold me and is going to take me down into a world that I've not yet experienced, but is deeper than the world I've experienced. And it's got this inviting. You, let me just look. It's inviting. It's mysterious. It's the unknown. But there came a moment when I'm either going to climb back over the railing, or I'm going to let my wife go do this adventure herself, or I'm going to let go of the bar, and I'm going to trust. Now, once I was down on the ground, man, it really did look like I stepped in. And there's one more photo I'll show you. And it's not a great photo from in the light, but you just know that there's a dinosaur coming out at any moment from that. And that, yeah, they've titled it right. It is The Lost World, if you know Jurassic Park for the 90s. But I don't just want to tell you that story just so you think I'm even more of a nerd. But it actually ties in to the passage that we're looking at tonight. So tonight in this I Am series, we're looking at John 15, this beautiful passage where Jesus actually says something. He says something very interesting. He makes a very interesting statement about himself. And so we're going to read that. So, okay, we got John 15, we got verses 1 through 17, and we're going to power through these 17 verses. So we're blazing speed. Here we go. And so Jesus is saying this to his students, his disciples. And he says, I am the true vine. That's his I am statement. I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. Literally, it means my Father is the vine dresser. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes so it will be even more fruitful. You are already clean because of the word I've spoken to you. That's a reference back to the foot washing episode where he says, you're clean. He said, I've already spoken cleanness over you, so remain in me as I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine. You are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can't do anything. If you do not remain in me, you are like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, they're thrown into the fire, and they're burned. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, you can ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. This is to my Father's glory that you bear much fruit, showing yourself to be my disciples. As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Now remain in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will remain in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commands and I remain in his love. I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. My command is this: love each other as I have loved you. You didn't choose me, jumping out of verse 16. You didn't choose me, but I chose you and I appointed you so that you might go and bear fruit, and fruit that will last. And so, whatever you ask in the name of my Father, he'll give to you. This is my command: love each other. Now, this passage is one of the classic texts. This specific passage is one of the classic texts in spiritual formation literature. And spiritual formation, which is near and dear to my heart, and it's kind of related to what I do here in the pastoral space. But if you're unfamiliar with that term of spiritual formation, the quote from Robert Mulholland can help us out. And it just says that spiritual formation is the process of being formed into the image of Christ for the sake of others. The process of being formed into the image of Christ, and this is really important, for the sake of others. Our formation into Christ's image is not for our own little navel-gazing salvation project. It is to, and he says over and over again here in this passage, to bear fruit. And that this passage gets right at the heart of that spiritual formation process, which is found in a word that keeps popping up in the text over and over and over again, 11 times in 17 verses, and it's the word remain. Remain. Some translations say abide, and that's fine. I like remain. That's the New International Version. I like that word. Now, if you're an ancient writer speaking to a world that's largely illiterate, and so you're texts are being heard, the way that you bold or highlight or italicize the words that you want to be important is that you just repeat them and say them over and over again. If you want somebody to know what's important in your text, you say it 11 times in 17 verses. It is important that we hear Jesus' invitation to us to remain. Now, according to Jesus, how are we formed and how do we bear fruit? By remaining with Him and in Him. But it's not just on us, because He says, remain in me as He also remains in us. He remains in us. And remember, that is who this God is. He is the God who remains with us. Yahweh, the God who is with us. And through His Spirit now, He doesn't just remain with us, He remains in us. With us and in us. Us in Him and with Him. This is a mutual abiding, mutual remaining relationship. Now, in some circles, this mutual abiding is called the mystical union. Doesn't that sound cool? That's a nerdy phrase. The mystical union. Now, Him and us and us in Him. And while the union is mystical, the outworking of that union is profoundly practical. Profoundly practical. In this passage, over and over again, He tells us what the outflow of this mysterious union together, Him and us in Him, and it's to bear fruit. To bear fruit. We actually have something to do in this life with Jesus. And it's not just more information, and it's not just writing more books, as much as I love them. We have something to do, and it's to bear fruit. And what exactly is that fruit? Love. Love for each other. But actually, according to this passage, we can't even begin to love each other outside of our love for Him. So, if we want to get better at loving others, we need to start leaning into loving Jesus. How do we love Jesus? Do we see Jesus as lovable? Is Jesus lovable? Because if we don't fall in love with Jesus, we're going to have a hard time loving anybody else. He says in verse 5, outside of our love for Him, there's really not much of anything that we can do. Now, the word love is kind of similar to the word God. And it gets confusing because it can mean so many things to so many different people. And so again, we need to let Jesus through His life and His actions and His teaching define what love is. But that gets just a little bit ahead of ourselves. Now, to just go to verse 1, what was it that Jesus said about it? Did you catch it? Jesus says something that's kind of interesting. Do you notice that He called Himself a plant? He called Himself a plant. Now, I've never called myself a plant. I've never been called a plant. And you know, Josh King, he's called his little daughter, Zinnia, he's kind of called her a plant a little bit, but I've never been called a plant. But Jesus, he calls himself a plant. And sometimes, you know what? You just want to go, come on, Jesus. Come on. Just give it to us straight. Can't you just give me the 10 steps to a successful life, Jesus? And He goes, no, sure can't. Not going to do that. What I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you that I'm a plant. And I'm not going to tell you I'm just any plant. I'm going to tell you that I'm a vine. And we go, okay. So, if we're going to be good readers of Scripture, and we're going to be careful, wise readers of Scripture, we have to ask the question, why does Jesus call Himself a plant? Why does He call Himself a vine? And not just a vine. He uses all this garden. Did you notice all the garden imagery? My Father's a vine dresser. He's a gardener. I'm a vine. Your branches, there's going to be fruit. Is He just hanging out in like gardens? Like why does He? Well, there's a good reason that He does this. And I'm so glad that you're interested, because we're going to go on a little journey here on why all this garden imagery is in there. And if you hang in there with the nerdiness, come into the nerdy forest with Phil, and it's going to be good. Okay. For Jesus and for all the Jewish people around Him in the first century, their minds and their imaginations, much like ours, were filled with the stories of their day, with the entertainment of their day. Only They didn't have true crime podcasts and Netflix documentaries and Mike Tyson fights and things to watch. Their stories, that was a terrible fight. Their stories came from the Hebrew scriptures. What we call the Old Testament. That was their form of entertainment. It was their form of wisdom. It was their form of knowledge. That was the world that they were in, like, saturated in. And those stories and those poems not only filled their imaginations, but like all great stories and all great art, shaped the way that they saw the world. And so Jesus' mind was filled with the art of his day. And just as a little aside, if we're going to take this journey with Jesus, this discipleship journey with Jesus seriously, these stories, these songs, these poems, they need to have just as much impact, at least as much impact, on the way that we form our thoughts, the way we form our worldview, as our pop culture does. That's all I'll say about that. But Jesus' mind was filled with the art and the literature of his day, and it seems that one of his favorite artists, one of his go-tos on his playlist, was the OG spoken word artist from ancient Israel, Yeshayahu ben Amoz. Now, I don't know if you've gotten into the poetry of Yeshayahu ben Amoz, but we're going to read a little bit because that's precisely where Jesus is getting this garden imagery from. So let's listen together to the poetry of old Uncle Yeshayahu, also known as Isaiah the prophet, son of Amos. Isaiah 5, 1-7. The song of the vineyard. And just see, listen for the connections. I will sing for the one that I love, a song about his vineyard. My loved one, he had a vineyard, and he had it on a fertile hillside. And he dug it up, and he cleared it of stones, and he planted it with the choicest of vines. And he built a watch. You hear that? He planted it with a vine. He built a watchtower in it, and he cut out a wine press as well. And he looked for a crop of good grapes, but it yielded only bad fruit. And that word bad in the Hebrew means putrid, rotten, disgusting fruit. And now we hear from the owner of the vineyard. He says, now you dwellers in Jerusalem and people of Judah, judge between me and my vineyard. Notice the switch to first person there. It's the voice of the owner. He says, what more could I have done for my vineyard than I've done for it? When I looked and expected good grapes, why did it only yield rotten, putrid fruit? And then down in verse 7, we find out that the vineyard owner is none other than Yahweh himself. And he says, the vineyard of the Lord Almighty is the nation of Israel. Israel's the vineyard. And the people of Judah, those are the vines that I planted and I delighted in. And he says, and he looked for justice. That was the fruit. That was the good grapes. The fruit he looked for was justice. But guess what he found? Bloodshed. Violence. I looked for righteousness, but instead I heard cries of distress. Now that word cry, that's the Hebrew word tse'akah. And tse'akah is the same cry that comes up from the Israelite, that's the Israelites that are enslaved in Egypt, and their cries of oppression reach the ears of Yahweh. And it's the same cry that the murdered blood of Abel cries out from the ground. It is tse'akah. It is a cry of oppression and injustice. And Yahweh hears that cry. So what's Isaiah saying? Isaiah is saying, so Yahweh has created this Eden-like vineyard, and it's full of possibility, full of Israel's flourishment. He's designed it for them to flourish, and he's designed it for them to complete their task. And what was their task? Their task was spreading Yahweh's goodness and his mercy and his justice to the rest of the world. That was their purpose. That was the whole project he had Israel on. But just like the original Eden that Adam failed in, life in Israel was meant to be a paradise, but because Israel failed, they failed to walk with Yahweh, they failed to fulfill their covenant. Instead of being a paradise, it became a divided kingdom full of injustice, full of violence, and full of oppression. So Isaiah calls Israel and Judah an unfruitful vine, an unjust and unrighteous people. And Yahweh says, you know what? I've had it. I've had it with you guys, and I'm going to remove my protective barrier and let the consequences come and consequences come. And part of those consequences were the fact that in Jesus' day, the Romans were patrolling the streets of Jerusalem and throughout the entire Jewish world. And so as Jesus comes in and he says, I am the true. Notice he said true. True means there was a false. True means there was an untrue vine. And so as he says, I am the true vine, his words remind his disciples of Eden and their failure. And Isaiah also reminds them of Isaiah and his judgment against Israel and Israel's failure. And Jesus says that he has become the fruitful and faithful Adam. He has become the faithful Israel. He fulfills the covenant on behalf of broken humanity. He is the true vine for the sake of the world. And this is what John is driving home in this passage. Jesus is with these guys and he's going, trust me. Trust me. Remain with me. Follow my teaching. I have done the work for you. I've completed the task for you. I've obeyed the commandments of my Father. I haven't just obeyed them. I've fulfilled them. That means he's actually lived them out the way that they were intended to be lived. And here in John 15, he simply invites these disciples, the men and women that are with him, to trust him. To trust him that he is the vine. He's saying, look, you don't have to be the vine. Israel was the vine. You don't need to be the vine. I'll be the vine. I'll be the vine for you. And he is the vine for us. And all we have to do is remain in him and trust that the fruit of an Eden-infused reality can come through us because we're attached to him. Now, what we usually say is, oh, fruit, great. We'll go out and bear some fruit, no problem. So we go to that beautiful passage in Galatians 5, and we look at the list, and we go, what's all? Oh, patience, great. Okay, this week, I'm going to work on patience. I'm going to be real patient. We go, patience, 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 patience. I'm going to be patient, and we get in the car, and everything happens, and we get to the end of the week, and we go, no patience. Well, you know what? Maybe patience isn't my thing. Let's go. What's next on the list? Oh, gentleness. Yes. Okay. And then I'm going to be gentle with my kids. And then our kids are our kids. And so we're not gentle with them. And we end up wearing ourselves out because we're working off of willpower. And so Jesus would come and say, No. You don't work on patience. You don't work on gentleness. You work on abiding. You work on falling in love with me. And when you abide with me, the fruit of patience and the fruit of gentleness naturally and easily flow out of you. We don't try harder to love others. We just learn to love Jesus. During that same trip, and I'll invite the band to come up. During that same trip to New Zealand, I had the highlight of my life. This was an actual highlight. I got to go to Hobbiton. Now, if you know anything about me as well, you'll know that I love Lord of the Rings. And I also not only love Tolkien and his life and everything, I love the movies that Peter Jackson filmed in New Zealand. And we got to go to Hobbiton. And it was beautiful and it was wonderful and it rained, but it didn't even matter because it was so great. But the tour guide told us this story. He's, you know, just highlighting and lauding the integrity of the director, Peter Jackson, and his commitment to, as best as he could, sticking to the page of Tolkien. And so they said he was so committed to making this like the book. There's a particular scene that Tolkien describes there being a plum tree that is in bloom. Well, because he's not actually dealing with hobbits and these are real, actual life-size people, the trees weren't the right size as plum trees. So what he did, he uprooted the trees that were there, and he brought in apple and pear trees, which were about the right size in comparison, ratio-wise. But of course, when those things came into bloom, well, they didn't look anything like a plum tree. So he hired hundreds of staff, hundreds of laborers I'm sure New Zealand was appreciative. But he hired hundreds of laborers to come in and one by one remove every leaf from this tree and remove every apple and remove every pear from these trees. And then he had flown in millions of silk leaves that look like plum leaves. And he flew in hundreds of thousands of fake wax plums, and painstakingly, laughing all the way to the bank, these guys sewed one by one all of these leaves on these branches and the fruit on the branches. And the crazy thing was, they said that the entire scene got cut, so none of it even saw the movie. So, there you go, taxpayers. So, I think we can spend so much time working to tie on fruit that we think we're supposed to have. We want to look like the part. We want to feel like we're the real deal. And we want to be the real deal. And we go, oh, I just want. So we put it on and we come to church. And the reality is, Andy said a few months ago in a series, I don't even remember what series it was. He was the first person I've ever heard say, you don't eat from your own tree. The fruit of the Spirit is for others' consumption, for the nourishment and the well-being of others. We don't grow fruits that we can eat off of our own tree. But when we go around tying on fruit that doesn't belong, you know what? When life squeezes you, what's inside of you comes out. It just does. You squeeze an orange, you're just going to get orange juice. You squeeze a wax plum, you're not going to get anything. Nothing that's beneficial, nothing that's nutritious. It's not going to bring you health or anything. It's of no benefit. We need to learn to remain. We need to learn to remain. But this comes down to trust. To remain comes down to trust. Jesus says, I am the vine. I'm the only source of true life. But do you believe that? Do you believe it? And you look at your life and maybe, like me, you're all harnessed up, but you're just hanging onto that bar. And maybe you like being here. You like the church stuff. Maybe you like the hangout. It is a good vibe. Maybe you like the grilled afterwards, and you're kind of hanging around the edges. But if you're honest with yourself, you've got a foot in two worlds. You got a foot up on the surface, and you got a foot dangling over a beautiful and lush, an incredible world that you're being invited into. But as long as you're hanging onto that bar, whatever that bar represents to you, and it might represent security, it might, I don't know. You know what it is. You know what it is. As long as you're hanging onto that, you're not experiencing freedom. This is the thing about hanging onto a bar and having a foot in two worlds. You're not actually experiencing freedom in either. You're not able to go down into the depths and explore this wonderful world that you're being invited to with God. And you're also not even able to go out and do whatever you're doing on the surface up here. You're just stuck. And it's not freedom. It's kind of the yuckiest place to be. And in fact, John, in a much later part of his life, he writes to a church and he writes about this kind of life. And he calls it lukewarm. And that lukewarm life, he says, it doesn't taste good to you, and it definitely doesn't taste good to Jesus. So we're at the end of this message, at the end of this sermon, but we're kind of right back to where we started. Jesus, in these I Am statements, makes a claim about who he is. And he says that he is the real deal. He says that God, his Father, is the owner of the vineyard, and he has prepared the way for us to actually bear fruit. He's removed the stones, he's built a wall, and he's planted the choicest vine, and Jesus claims that he is that vine. That he is the true vine, the only source of real life, and the only way that we produce the kind of fruit that will actually bring Eden into the world for the sake of others is through him. And that kind of fruit is real, genuine, sacrificial love for each other that brings Eden into the world. So tonight, I've really got two groups of people that I just want to pray for. The first one, maybe you're new to faith, or maybe you've been in it for a long, long time, but you're still hanging on to a bar. And it might be a big bar, or it might be really nuanced and really small, but it's something that you're not willing to let go of. And it's holding you hostage. It's holding you hostage. And the other group, maybe you're on the outskirts. Maybe you're so far back you can see the safety rail, but you're not even in the harness and you're just kind of observing from the distance, and you haven't really come to a place where you've answered that question of God is. What? You don't really? But there's something about that world that is drawing you and it's compelling you. And there's this mystery to it, and you go, oh, I just want to get a little bit closer. I just want to peek over and see. And maybe tonight you put a harness on. Maybe tonight you just take a few steps closer to the edge. Maybe you clip in. Maybe you fall back. Maybe you put your trust and you shift your weight from the bar into the harness, and you trust Jesus and you allow him to take you on this journey that will never, ever, ever be the same for the rest of your life. And he's going to begin something tonight. So if either one of those speak to you in any kind of way, I don't need you to come forward. I don't need you to do a big thing, but I'm just going to invite you to reflect. Am I holding a bar? Is there something that's keeping me from the actual life that I'm being called to live? What's keeping me from remaining? If there are fears and there are insecurities and there are reactions and there are all these things that are stirring inside of you, and you're not finding that you're producing the fruit that maybe you produced at some other time in your life, or you're not producing the kind of fruit that you want to produce, chances are there's somewhere you're not remaining. So just give it to him. Surrender. That's key. I had to surrender to that harness. I had to transfer all my weight and all my trust into that thing. What do you need to surrender tonight? What do you need to let go of and trust that Jesus is who he said he was? The band's going to play, and I just want you to put your hand on your heart. Maybe just a small act of saying, yeah, that's me. I don't need to see it. It's not for me. But just for yourself, and you go, you know, Jesus, there's something. And maybe you need to ask him what it is. There's just a sense of freedom. And you know, can I just say, this is just coming to me now. Man, our world, guys, it is riddled with inappropriate images and pornography and all of these things. You know what? Can I just say, I don't know who this is for, but can I just say, you can't love someone and use them at the same time. You can't love somebody while you're using them. And if you would say, you know what, I have a problem with lust, can I just posit that you may have been naming it that you don't have a problem with lust, you have a problem with love. It's a love problem. And we need to learn to love others and see other human beings the way that God sees other human beings. And when we love people, we don't use them. We don't use them for our own benefit and what we can get from them. We love them. We don't use people. We love people. So I don't know what that was for, but just wanted to say that. So as the band plays, just reflect. Reflect. What do you need to let go of? What's that bar for you?
We hope this message encouraged or perhaps even challenged you in your Christian faith. Our pastors meet regularly with people to pray and support them, and we extend this invitation to you. Please let us know if we can contact you to offer support. Simply call the office or visit nexuschurch.com.au.